In this module, we're going to be focusing on coping with death, and specifically grief and bereavement. We are bereaved when someone who is close to us passes away. Close is not easily defined in our society. For example, in many areas of employment, you may only get off for the death of a parent, a spouse, or a child. And so in some aspects of our society, what is considered close is our most direct relatives. Most of us are going to experience strong bereavement, not just for our very close relatives, but for distant relatives, for friends, and even for individuals who are work colleagues and who we know in other capacities. So this is a big challenge, is first how society views a person as close or not close. A change in status can occur if a child becomes an orphan, if a wife becomes a widow, or a husband a widower. And so we tend to see that bereavement is even stronger in individuals where a change in status occurs. And also, we see some different phenomenons in terms of bereavement when it is mass death, when it's a result of surviving a natural disaster or a war. So we're talking about bereavement as something that the survivors experience. So it is a physical and an emotional experience for individuals. Grief is our response that we have to bereavement, to this loss that is being experienced. So this is how one moves on. This is how one survives that loss. On a physical level, this can take the form of tightness in the throat, shortness of breath, feeling like you have no muscle power, like jello, feeling stomach cramps, stomach pain, an empty kind of feeling in the stomach area. And what we found is that prolonged grief can actually act as a chronic stress, and this can increase individuals' risks, lower their immune system, increase their cardiovascular risk as well. So there are a lot of physical responses that we have to death. We also have cognitive responses that include confusion, lowered attention span, difficulty concentrating, memories that are coming upon you that may be coming without will, as well as anger and anxiety or the emotional aspects. And these can stay steady or they can come in waves. And these can last for, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, months. And that is fairly normal. So there's a lot of push to kind of put a timeline on grief, and there really is no timeline on grief. Society may try and set timelines like this person should be over the loss of so-and-so by a month or by a year. And what the research has shown is there really is no timeline on grief. So then we have bereavement, which is the actual experience of the loss, grief, which is the response to the loss. And then we have mourning, which is a culturally patterned expression of bereavement. And so this can take many, many different forms based on the society, the culture, the religious traditions. For example, dressing all in black, that is a cultural form of mourning. Okay. And there are many, many different others. Wailing during the funeral process, that is a culturally accepted form of mourning in certain cultures. And so this is really just the cultural aspects, the public display of grief is what we're talking about here and what forms it takes. So there are many different types of grief that we want to focus on. Normal grief is going to stay within the bounds of a particular culture. And this is what I'm saying is really, really difficult to define. What is normal grief? What is a normal grieving period? At what point should you go back to work? Should you pick up your life, go back to doing what you were doing, maybe start dating again, or these types of things? So culturally, there's a lot of varied views on this. And so this makes it difficult to really establish what is normal grief. We do know what is not normal grief. That has been defined quite well in the literature. Complicated grief is when a person does not move from the shock and pain of their loss toward a return to a fulfilling life. So if a person is not moving on, they're not continuing things that they found pleasurable, activities that they were engaged in before, if they're not getting out of bed, they're not, you know, carrying on, they're not going to social events after, you know, a couple of months, typically after 3 to 6 months, we might be looking at complicated grief. And this is when the person is not regaining and moving on with their life. So this is something that we'll talk about more about how this should be handled, whether the person should be referred to for grief counseling, and what does it mean for themselves and for their family members. So we'll be looking into complicated grief quite a bit. Traumatic grief is a very severe and disabling response to sudden and often violent death. So this is very, very disabling for the individuals who experience a very traumatic death, an unexpected loss. And so we can see them having very, very, very difficult responses to this. The immediate response is quite debilitating. They can't function. They can't eat. They can't sleep. They're not handling, you know, not being able to make decisions about the funeral process and these types of things. So traumatic grief is usually a response to a very sudden or violent loss. Anticipatory grief is how do we cope with an expected loss? So if you're caring for a loved one who's been sick for a long time or is in hospice or assisted living or has Alzheimer's disease and you know death is coming, you're just not sure when, but you may be taking care of this person in their end of life stages for years, then we call this anticipatory grief. You know it's coming. How are you coping with this loss that is expected? And there's quite a bit of research happening now studying this phenomenon of anticipatory grief. And many people that I have talked to says, you know, but until it really happens, you still feel that shock and pain of loss, even though you've been anticipating that loss for a very long time, especially with in the case of relatives that have chronic long-term illnesses that are incurable, you know, stage 4 cancer and Alzheimer's and dementia, those types of things. Then we have resolved grief, which is when the person is moving towards recovery and is less debilitated by their grief. Unresolved grief is when those debilitating effects have continued longer than would be expected. And once again, this is difficult to define because it's very culturally standard. What do we consider to be the expected length? And does it depend on what the loss is? Would this be stronger for the loss of a parent or a spouse or a child? Would one expect a person to resolve their grief fairly quickly for a grandparent or a cousin or a coworker? So this is very difficult, once again, to define. What do we mean by expected in our society? What is the expected length of grief? Hidden grief for individuals who hide any signs of their grief. They just want to appear normal. They want to go on with their lives. They don't want people to talk about things. And usually what we find with people who go through this type of grief is that it's going to come to a point at some stage. This is going to come out. They're going to have the emotions that they've been keeping in for so long are going to come out in some form or another. And so this is not considered to be a healthy form of grief as well. Perhaps one of the most worrisome for our society right now is disenfranchised grief. This is when the society does not recognize the person's right to be grieving. Doctors, physicians, other healthcare professionals are really struggling with this one, where society doesn't view that they should be grieving for their patients, and yet they do. They go through an emotional and physical response at the loss of a patient, particularly one that they've cared for a very long time. And because this is not being explored, there's not a lot of support groups for physicians. They don't have, you know, group therapy or other type of support groups. We're seeing a lot of challenges related to disenfranchised grief and other stresses of the job when it comes to healthcare professionals and the fact that they don't have these outlets to deal with their emotions that they experience at the loss of a patient. And so we are seeing high rates, of course, of alcohol and drug use, increasing rates amongst physicians and other healthcare providers, because they have to find a way to cope somehow. And if society does not accept that they should be coping with the loss of those who they've treated as patients, then there's always going to be some disenfranchised grief and some other way of coping. Other individuals who may experience disenfranchised grief include foster parents, who may not be expected to grieve for the loss of a child that they've been fostering. Individuals who are in homosexual relationships. This is particularly one of the biggest issues, and why the gay marriage issue has been such a hot topic, is because society without marriage does not view that person as a spouse and does not view their right to grieve over the loss of their loved one. And so we see that many partners may be pushed out by surviving relatives, friends, family, particularly siblings and parents, who may not want them there, who did not accept them as this person's life partner, and push them out from the funeral or from the collective grieving process that's going on. And these individuals end up with disenfranchised grief. Nurses, other caregivers, people who work in the school system, teachers, educators, who experience the loss of a child, of one of their students, and society is really not giving them a space to grieve for that loss. Loss of an animal. If a pet was like a child to you, but society just says, get over it, just go get another pet. This is a big challenge. The loss of a child through miscarriage, through ectopic pregnancy, through stillborn babies. Society's gotten much better about this one, where they recognize the right and the time that a parent or parents need to mourn the loss of their unborn child. It has gotten better, but it's still not where it needs to be. So there are a lot of different forms of disenfranchised grief that individuals may experience. One of the biggest things that comes out of grief work theory, which does have its origin in Sigmund Freud, surprisingly enough, is that grief work and getting over and coping with this experience, these emotional and physical experiences, this is a long-term process where a person needs to accept the reality of the death and start to move on from their loss. This process can be very complicated. It can be very long. And so Freud was actually one of the individuals who pioneered this area of grief work theory and focuses on how do we move past this type of loss. There are others, such as Bowlby, who focused on overcoming our attachment to the figure who's lost. And then we have Parks's theory of grief work, which focuses on moving past our preoccupation with thoughts of the deceased person, repeating the loss experience in our minds, and how we explain the loss. Many other theoretical approaches exist when it comes to grief work and how we move through the stages to accept the loss and move on with our own lives, which is the main focus. That's what's considered to be healthy in this area. And most agree that there are various stages that individuals will go through. Those not all will go through the same stages or in the same order as they are moving through grief. This is an emotional process, it's a cognitive process, and it is very much a social process of how do we go through and deal with these various forms of loss in our lives. So we have both emotional and physical reactions. These can be stronger in cases of spousal bereavement, as the research has shown, and the loss of a child and the loss of a parent. And we see a lot of different stages of going through recovery, especially when we're talking about those types of changes in status that we see with spousal bereavement. How does the person prepare for life without this person? How do they deal with the distress that they're feeling at their loss? So this is very, very common. When we talk about people who've lost a spouse, this is there can be very various types of unresolved grief that may occur, especially if they had been highly dependent upon that spouse, if the relationship had been troubled, if the death was sudden and without warning. These individuals tend to have higher rates of unresolved grief and a harder time dealing with this loss. When it comes to the loss of a child, This has been described sometimes as shadow grief, that the grief, the loss, stays with the parents for years, almost like a shadow. And it can be very, very strong memories, hallucinations, incorporation of the child's characteristics into their own personalities or to the personalities of future children. And so there's quite a bit of research going on coping with the loss of a child as well. We found that older adults cope better than anybody else. They are better able to deal with loss. This comes from their cumulative type of experiences that they've had over time. But older people also are at higher risk to die if they have had the loss of a spouse at that late age. The longer you're with your spouse, the higher the chance of developing illness or death following the loss of one of the spouses. So this can be a big problem as well for long-term partners. One of the things that we found is that grief counseling works for individuals. Group kind of counseling as well, peer support groups, especially for specific groups like parents who've lost a child to suicide, or these types of group therapy and support groups can be very, very helpful to individuals who are trying to cope with death and move past their grief reactions. So as we're coping, there's a lot of different ways of coping with the loss. We have emotion-focused coping, which is really the area where grief work theory focuses on trying to control our emotional reactions to the stressful situation. We have problem-focused coping. That's when people are actually trying to do something physical to cope with their loss, and that may be just burying themselves in work or setting up a new organization or foundation that's going to educate people about whatever the lost individual may have experienced, a type of cancer or suicide or loss through drunk driving. So a lot of people find meaning and a way to cope by physical activities and engaging themselves in various issues. Others just work through it emotionally and try and manage their emotions. And then others use what we call religious-based coping, which is turning to God or a higher power to help them to cope with the situation. Who is coping? In the case of a bereavement, it's the people who've survived. If we're talking about somebody in the dying stages, then the dying person themselves is coping, as well as their family members and friends, as well as their caregivers, who are often not recognized as a key part of this dying process. So there are various ways of coping with death. There are various types of grief that an individual may go through. But the bottom line is that everyone will experience grief. They will experience loss at some point in their lives. Everyone is going to cope with this individually and in different ways. And there is no timeline per se on grief that says that we should be over the loss. And so these are important points when it comes to grief and coping with grief.